If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings and the divine love of the One Beloved. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks, or Closet Christ. This evening our seminar topic is, what is life's purpose? And I'm going to give you a Venusian perspective, okay? So if you're ready, take a deep breath. And allow the spirit of life, that one divine beloved spirit, to fill you from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet. Feel it tingle all the way down into your little tippy toes. And take another breath. Let it wash through you and clear and cleanse any debris, any psychic junk that you may have picked up in your heart, mind, thoughts, emotions. Let it all go. Take another deep breath. And integrate. Oh, that vastness, as much as you can contain, of the birthless, deathless, pure, eternal, immortal being that you are. That ever-expansive awareness. And that ever-present bliss. That is your natural state. So, what is life's purpose? How did it all get started? And where is it headed? Did you ever think about that? I mean, a lot of people don't. They don't give any thought to that at all. As I may have told you at some point, I've come back in time myself as a soul from the future. And I was aware of that from the time I was born. From the time I was conscious of being on Earth, which was a very young child, I was aware of having come from a place very different than Earth. And it was a place of great love, where things were manifested instantly by thought. You traveled by intention. And you created like a little, it looked like a little bubble like the Jetsons use. The comic strip, you know, the Jetsons, their little bubble craft. It was like that, only it was made of thought. It was made of light. So it conveyed you to the destination of your intentions, and more than one person could utilize it, which saved time and energy. Well, not really time, because we don't use time such as you use it here. But I'm just saying, it provided a vehicle for the transport of a unified field of intention that would be coalesced around us. I also found it very disconcerting that cars crashed here. I kept asking the mother of the body, why do they crash? They're not supposed to do that. And I would constantly ask her when I could go home to my real family. So this was a young child that came in directly from Venus and wasn't asleep. Did not have the mercy of a veil drop on me. So I've had to do my life with open eyes and remembrance. And for a long time I thought I had been rejected and abandoned and left by my home family, my home group, because I had a vague memory of watching them depart. And for years, I would burst into tears if someone I loved very much left, whether it was by a plane or a car. If I'd see them drive off or fly off, I'd burst into tears. It was terrible for me. I remember one time I was in India with Sai Baba, and in those early, early days, sometimes we were allowed to follow his car when he would be leaving to go someplace. And one day we were allowed to follow Baba's car, and we ended up at the airport. And I stood behind this link fence watching my life in the form of Satya Sai Baba, whom I regarded as God, get in a plane and disappear into the clouds. And I remember I just burst into these racking sobs. And it was triggering again that memory of my home family leaving me here and going forth. So I had what might be called a misinterpretation at the very get-go of not being wanted, of being rejected, of somehow being disenfranchised from my true home. And some of you may feel that too. But it was only many, many years later that it came to my awareness that I wasn't abandoned. I chose to come here because I wanted to, and I was free to do that. And some of you may be in the same situation. We're not really here to do the human number. I think you have found out by now it doesn't work real well. It's a situation where you're darned if you do and darned if you don't. It's a no-win when you think you're a human being confined to this body that seems to require constant maintenance, constant taking care of. It's always hurting. It's heavy. It's cumbersome to move from one place to another. And the other thing, I remembered flying. I was able to do soul travel on Venus, and but I didn't know it was Venus at the time, of course. I was just remembering as a young child. But I would keep trying to jump off high things and fly because it was so easy for me to do that in the other realms. And I couldn't understand why I couldn't do it here. So these were bleed-through memories of a soul that had come in, and I was told later I had to have some assistance from Ashtar and the crew aboard ship because it was physically impossible for my mother to conceive a child. Her womb was tilted backwards, and a large tumor had closed the mouth of the cervix. So when she got pregnant, the doctor said, well, you know, this is impossible. You can't possibly carry this child to term. But I kept appearing to her in a different series of ages from babyhood all the way up through the time I was in school so that my mother knew that I would indeed be born. But years later, I asked Ashtar about that, and he told me that some adjustments had been made to enable my father and mother to conceive, and that was facilitated aboard ship. And I didn't know that. I just found that out some years, not too long ago. So I'm just saying that we get here how we get here, and we have a purpose in life that is not going to be real obvious to you if you just take the indoctrination of this planet. Just about everything they tell you is couched from a position of lack of awareness, lack of direct divine experience. Because what happens here is that people have a lower time-bound mind that is created to interpret life at the third dimensional level, which is basically survival. And, you know, in the modern world, it's basically commercialism. So those two don't mix real well when you're bringing in a divine consciousness into a human form, because most of us do not care a whole heck of a lot about material things. That's just not what we live for. And we're not money-oriented. What are we oriented to? Service, value, quality, love, sharing, caring, and enjoying the abundance of a great universe that was created for us to experience everything and to harm and abuse nothing, so that everything we do becomes an impartation of loving graciousness, of bliss. We're tributaries of grace, inlets of the divine into this time-space continuum. But you can't exactly put that on your resume, can you? And on this planet, you've created this silly, bothersome, stupid idea of needing money for everything, which we don't have on Venus. We don't have a monetary system. Everything is created to be shared, to be enjoyed. And it's a creation birthed of our own heart coherent rate. So it's literally birthed from the authenticity of our heart and its innermost being. Venus entered some time back into the Golden Age, so that the vibration there is extremely high and extremely refined, and it acts to the Earth as a higher self, like the soul. It's like the soul consciousness of the Earth. And as this whole solar system spirals along with the rest of the universe into this shift that they call the shift of the ages or the ascension, Earth will be moving into the orbit of Venus as Venus spirals up to take her next position. Everything is spiraling up to the next gradient of consciousness and light. And so, many of us from Venus have come here to begin to import a frequency of consciousness into this world that's going to be the natural state in the new Earth. The new Earth, Sai Baba has described as being a place completely devoid of all forms of evil, crime, pain, and negativity. It will be completely pure love. And it's not going to apparently, according to Sai Baba, it's not going to be a presto changeo where all of a sudden there's a transport or a transferal to another planet. It's going to be the raising of the vibration of this Earth into a higher dimensional point of view, let's put it that way. So that the only thing probably you will notice, as I have been noticing for some time, is that you live in grace and ease. And there's a flow and beauty to your life, a serenity and a bliss that you notice just by contrast that very few people seem to be living in. And by the same token, the people that you begin to interact with seem to be on that same wavelength. So if there's going to be a separation, which sometimes people speak about the separation of the sheep and the goats, which I don't like these metaphors that separate people very much. I think we're all headed into a wonderful, wonderful time and cycle, and I choose to believe we're all worthy and that we're all going to make it if we want to. Some people really like to be warriors. They really are the, the gladiators of the planet, and they're not going to be real happy with a world that doesn't have conflict. So they will be able to stay in the vibration of the Earth that affords them the conflict and the drama and the stuff that they like. But for the rest of us that would like to use our energy to be co-creators with God and to create an incredibly beautiful, lush, verdant, and vibrant life that is not defined by form and the maintenance of form, but is an expansion of awareness and love and vivacity and creative expression, we will find ourselves gradually merging into that vibratory point of view. I like to use that term because that's more, I think, definitive of the shift of consciousness. It's a point of view that is defined by our light quotient, which I spoke about last week. The radiatory effect of our overall sense of who we are and what we are and our being is what transmits a particular wavelength of frequency by which we're identified. You might call it your soul signature. But it's who you are in the composite of who you are, not just this little enchilada that you think is your body with the name that you've tacked onto it, but the overall composite of what you have become through all your many immersions in time-space. Because we're at the point of graduation. This is the culmination of a 26,000-year cycle where we are moving from a 12,000-year period of darkness into a 12,000-year period of light. And this would be the progression of the equinox, as it's called, or the entrance into what has been defined as the Aquarian Age, or the age presided over by the Lion of Judah, or the Leo. There's many, many metaphors. But the point I'm making is that we're entering into a time in which we come into greater alignment with the great central sun and the logos of that sun, which is as the god that we are part of, the creation of that god, which would be the heart of the heart of the heart of the great central sun. And so that great solar logos, we are in its body, as cells would be in your physical body. We live and move and have our being within this great solar logos that we, for all intents and purposes, would call God for this creation that we are in. Now, the overall purpose of why we are here is to manifest, embody, and express the overall principle of love and wisdom. And that combined energetic, we would call truth, with a capital T. That is the truth. God is love that presides as the creational motif and theme for this particular solar system and this particular universe. So everything is love-driven, love-motivated, love-fueled. And then you have, as the other counterbalance, the immature love of attachment. And it is the attachment, usually, to what we desire that fuels the reincarnational rounds, which serve as educational classrooms for souls to pass through. So you move from being motivated by sheer desire to acquire, to possess, to maintain, to separate out from others so they can't get it, which would be an ego's use of the desire principle. You move through those stages in your movement through the classrooms afforded by this planet and the other planets in the solar system, which are all schools of consciousness, to the place where you simply live as a manifestation of love and wisdom. And one of the characteristics of that stage is synthesis. Synthesis is where you can see the commonality in all things. It's where you can see the one, regardless of how many facets of differentiation are expressed. You see the common denominator. And when you're able to move into synthesis, which, by the way, the masters tell us is one of the most difficult and rare positions of consciousness, because most people really get attached to their opinions, their belief systems, their indoctrinations. They're convinced they're right, whether they're in religion or science or education or psychology or whatever field. You'll tend to find the specialists that can only see tunnel visioned into their own little particular perspective, and they don't want to hear about anything else, and everything else is separate from what they're doing and therefore wrong, or lesser, or whatever. That seems to be the default setting of the lower consciousness here on this planet. Now, we who come from Venus don't understand that at all. That is one of the most foreign things for us, because as I said before, we live as a collective of loving sharing. Probably more than any other quality, you will find that the Venusian consciousness is one of pure love and bestowal, self-bestowal. A Venusian is constantly bestowing. And the bestowal can take many forms, but it's an overall sense of goodwill towards everything and everyone. They have absolutely no concept of hatred, none whatsoever. Of course, there was a time when we actually on Venus were worse than the worst of Earth. So it's a progressive unfoldment into this understanding. It's a gradual expansion. And every soul has to go through that maturation process from being selfish and miserly and totally it's all about me sort of thing, me and mine and what I can get, to being universal and Christed in the consciousness, where you just live to give and bestow and radiate, and you have no personal agenda that you're trying to extort into anyone else's life. So that's what we're moving into. And it's a glorious thing. Last week I spoke about the advancing era of light that we're entering into and how we each have a role and a part to play in that. Now you have to decide what that is for yourself. You came encoded with it, so don't say you don't know. If you don't know, it's because you've been too busy knowing other things and you haven't taken the time to really reflect on who you are. You maybe have been so busy raising kids or doing your job or whatever that you haven't allocated a decent amount of time to quiet contemplation of your own divine essence. Who are you? What makes you tick? What motivates you to get out of bed in the morning? What do you do that when you're doing it, you completely lose all sense of time and physicality, and you go into that creative zone where you're just one with whatever it is you're doing? As I've told you many times, I do that when I write. You know, I can be there for 16 hours and never even take a sip of water. Not advised. It's not a good thing for your body down here. But just saying that you got to find that thing that lights you, ignites you, activates you, quickens you, because that's your purpose. So if I were to ask you, what's your life purpose, what would your response be? And answer it for yourself. Don't wait for me to tell you. My purpose and your purpose are two different things. Bear in mind that every soul is the unique only begotten of the Creator. We are a one of, there's not another resonant field of consciousness like you anywhere in existence. So if you don't do you, do your life, and find your purpose, who's going to do it? You're going to be missing in action. Or you're going to be just, you know, an automatic pilot, and allow your subconscious karma to drive you. And that looks like a very unconscious, random, unfocused life. I suppose a purpose of that would be to work out your subconscious unconscious. But there's much more to that. I would like to instill in you, through my own enthusiasm, a spark of the great adventure. Life is the most extraordinary adventure. And when you don't take it all that seriously, and you play in it, and you play with it, and you dance in it. Baba told me to dance when I asked him what I should do. He said, oh, dance. But what he meant was like the Shiva dance, where Shiva's just spinning around, and as he spins, he's creating worlds, and his long hair is flying, and his robes are flying, and he's twisting and turning and spinning, and he's creating worlds and destroying them, because that's what Shiva does. That's his thing. So what's your thing? What do you do? What lights you up? What puts you in that zone? And where are you headed? You know, you wouldn't dream of getting in an airplane without a destination, or a train, or even getting in your car. Don't you have some idea where you're going? Well, think of your life as your vehicle. Your body, your life overall, is your vehicle. Pay attention when you dream of cars, because that's your life. That's a metaphor of what's carrying you through time-space. So, where are you headed? You know, I've always known since I was a little kid what I was here to do. I was here to help people connect with God. Bottom line, that was it. And that's what I love to do. And that's what I do, because that's my nature. I can't do otherwise. I have to do my nature. So your purpose is your nature. It's as much encoded into every cell of your being as, well, there's nothing as encoded into every cell of your being but the divine purpose that you were created for. Nothing. So realize that your life is here about you. Even the people who are playing the roles of yourself, embodied as your children or your spouse or your significant other, those are all projections of your own being. They are, let's say, incarnations of your own divine essence. You are like the sun. These are like the planets revolving around the sun of your soul. And you give them warmth and love and light. But you are the one that has to be the sun, the S-U-N, the divine sun of your own life. You have to be on the center stage of your life. You have to be enacting your particular role, the thing that you were created to do. So I'm going to give you a couple really simple keynotes of how to track energetically and vibrationally when you are opening to your own intuitive knowing, okay? On Venus, for example, we learn by immersion in a frequency. We become imprinted by immersion in a frequency. Whether we're learning a science or whatever, we enter a, let's say, a building, for lack of a better definitive here, a building, an energetic, which embodies the quintessential totality of a body of understanding that's composed of light, sound, and holographic imagery that we enter into, much like a holodeck that you saw in Star Trek. And through immersion in that, almost through osmosis, we absorb that quality, that color of light and sound. And it lives in us, as us, and through us. So you don't learn through a linear approach like you do here on Earth. It's very, very experiential. But you discern by the feeling and the vibration of that state. This is how you soul travel as well, when you move your consciousness out of the physical body and you move in that higher body of light. You do the same thing. You learn to intuit through the heart, through the feelings that arise in the heart. And when I say heart, I really am speaking more of your Atma, the Atmic presence of the divine. It has a feel to it that is like it's emanating from your heart, but it's going even beyond what you would consider your heart. It's like your essence is responding. And every time you go into that place, I want you to notice there's a release and a freeing. It's like a dimensional opening, a release and a freeing. I want you to pay attention when you dream, when you have dreams where you're flying. Observe yourself when you're flying. You have a release and a freeing. And also notice that you can't elevate and fly if you're bogged down with negativity. Notice that just like in the story of Peter Pan and Wendy, they had to think, you know, what was it? Positive thoughts and a pinch of pixie dust or something. I don't remember. But anyway, you get the idea. You have to keep your thoughts and your vibrations high in order to ascend or fly. I have many dreams where I'm just ascending, or I'm flying, or I'm hovering, you know, just sitting in Padmasana, cross legs, and hovering. And I notice that I do that when I'm in a certain state of expanded awareness. But the principle holds true in the physical plane, too, because we are going to be levitating and bilocating as we raise our vibration and move more into those higher bodies of light. We will definitely be transcending the gravitational pull of this planet. We'll be neutralizing it. And when the inner and outer centrifugal and centripetal forces are perfectly balanced and co-resonant coherency, you ascend. And that, or you levitate, as the case may be. So pay attention. As I spoke for many seminars now, practicing spiritual awareness is simply noticing what's going on. You just notice without commentary. At Vipassana meditation, you just notice. So pay attention and notice your dreams, your inner plane experiences that you think are dreams when you're out of your body at night, your flights of fancy during the day when you're very often carried off in soul travel, and it simply looks like you're daydreaming. Pay attention. Always look to see where you are. Always look to see whatever you can bring forward into your conscious awareness and write it down. It's very, very subtle and very ephemeral. So if you think, oh, well, I'll write it down later. No, you won't. It'll be gone like a whiff of incense smoke. So write it down as soon as you possibly can. Or, you know, just make bullet notes until you have a time when you can really contemplate and view the information. Because everything in your life is going to show up on the inner planes before it precipitates into the physical. So it's a good way to tune in. So the energetic that I want you to watch for, whenever you are moving into a place of knowing, a place of intuitive knowing, it's deeper than thinking. When you're moving beyond thinking into awareness, you're going to notice a relief and a release. I had one just now, which is, again, I'm moving deeper and deeper into what we're looking at, and I had a sense of release and opening and freeing within myself. So Jesus said that you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. So the only way you're ever going to know truth is to experience it for yourself. You can't know it through books. Books just reflect the knowing and awareness of other people. Now, if you're reading a book that's written by a great avatar like Sai Baba or an enlightened person, then, you know, you have a good reflection. You have something that can be useful to you. But nevertheless, you're still going to have to own it through your own direct experience. And there's no fudging on this exam. You know, the whole thing is that you have to embody. You have to embody the truth that sets you free. And in that way, you become an emancipator wherever you go. You set people free. And it's a progression. You know, you practice it. It's on-job training, 24/7. You're always on being trained for this. And as I've said, you know, many, many times, enlightenment is eternal and ever unfolding, and, you know, there's no end, there's no ceiling, there's no point where you can say, well, that's it, I've attained the highest. No, you haven't. You just maybe got your toenail in the door. Keep going. So, keep going. So, let's say that your life had a theme, like a novel, what would you entitle your life? What would be the overall theme? That's going to be a really good representation of your purpose. You know? So just notice. Look at it. Journal, if you wish. It's a good way to get your thoughts out of your head and down into the paper. They say if you want to know whether or not you know something, try to share it with someone. Try to teach it. Try to write an essay on it. You'll find out whether or not it has landed in you, or it's just kind of dancing around the periphery of your intellect, but you haven't really partaken of it directly. So the Venusian perspective is that our planet needs to move into two things. One, it needs to understand that we are a very small planet on Earth and that we have to share it as one family. No exceptions. And so, until we begin to think globally instead of nationally and nationalistically, we're going to have the disparity between the haves and the have-nots, and the unequal and unjust distribution of planetary resources, which really need to be co-shared on the planet. And the other thing is that we need to develop a sense of genuine caring and goodwill towards all life forms. That's probably a bit idealistic to say at this point, but I think in speaking to you, I can speak frankly, because most of the people that listen to this particular seminar each Wednesday are starseed. They're people here from higher planets in many cases, or at least at some point in their progression as soul. And so you've come in to do something more than occupy space and load and unload, as Sai Baba would say. You're here to inject a particular unique quality of higher awareness and love into the collective consciousness. That's why you're here. That's really your purpose. And you can only do that from the authenticity of who you really are. Just metaphorically speaking, if God would put the squeeze on you and squeeze you to the max, where everything but your life essence, you know, is out of you, what would be left? What would be extracted? Like, for example, you squeeze an olive and you get olive oil, or a rose, you get rose oil. What would come out of you if the squeeze was put on you? And so life, in the purely material, everyday sense, is meant to do just that. It is to put the squeeze on you. It's to pressure you. It's the pressure between the true self and the ego self that causes that divine essence to be extruded. And that's the purpose, that we go through hardships and difficulties in life, because you're not going to grow any other way. You're not going to develop the strength of mastery if you don't have something you have to master. So also notice the things that you have mastered. Give yourself some credit. Many of you have overcome all sorts of things. I think we all have the areas that we've had as challenges that we've had to overcome. So, again, notice, and without commentary and without judgment. So just play with it and keep looking at these questions. What is life's purpose? Where is it all heading? And what's my life purpose? And where am I headed? What would you like your end of the chapter of your novel, say your life is a novel, what would you like to have written in that last chapter? And of course, you know, the approach that we use on Venus is to act from the end product. Act as if you had already arrived at that place. Enact it. Pretend it. Role play it. Model it. Whatever you have to do to get into that vibrational state. And just don't let stepping out of character be an option. If you were an actor on a stage, stepping out of character would become so obvious to anyone watching the movie that you wouldn't dare do it. Nobody would hire you anymore. You'd be such a lousy actor. So find that place of empowerment in your own role, in your own authenticity, and where that role, that impetus is headed, and move yourself into it however you can. You know, people that are actors, I used to be an actor many, many, many years ago. I majored in theater arts in college. But a good actor, you'll see them getting into character. They'll pace back and forth, you know, in the wings, and they'll go over their lines, and, you know, you'll see them work themselves up into an emotional state if they're going to portray a violent scene or a sad scene or whatever. You'll see them get into character. And we really need to get into the character that we intend to present as our final act on the stage of life. And each day, you practice into mastering that role, mastering that state, so that when you finally come to the ta-da, and you're ready to move on from this stage to another stage of life, because life is ongoing and nobody dies, nobody gets extinguished, everybody goes on, you will feel the exuberant joy of knowing you did your best in that drama. Boy, you just really acted it out, full on, downstage center, full spotlights, and you got a standing ovation. So live your life with that intent, that you're going to give your very, very best. And don't get schlocky and you know, lazy. Live your life on purpose. Every day, live your life on purpose. Be relentless in the pursuit of whatever it is your life is headed towards. And you're bound to arrive. You know, you're bound to manifest that state if you're absolutely on purpose and relentless with your commitment to that purpose. So, again, look for the point of relief. Look at the point of release, because you shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free. What is the freedom when you misunderstand someone? Say you're in a relationship and you have a misunderstanding, and you feel really uptight, your stomach's in a knot, you feel your heart kind of feels closed down, you feel guilty, you feel really bad. And then remember how it feels when you make peace with that person. Notice the different states before and after. Notice the point of release. When you communicate heart to heart, you apologize, whatever it is you need to do to clear that energy, and then notice. You see, you've moved from the error and the falsehood of separation to the point of oneness and truth. That's the truth. That's you and your brother and your sister, your fellow person, are being inhabited by the same spirit of the one beloved, one Atma. Like one light current is flowing through all the light bulbs that we call individual bodies. And regardless of the color or shape of the light bulb, the current that illumines each one is the same. Knowing that is God realization. Being that is the ultimate truth. And in highest truth, you've always been that. You could not be that. Not be that. But there's a part of the mind that we have a standard issue with the human form that's called the little thought form of separation, the belief in separation. And that's what we call the ego mind. And that little constricted part of understanding, well, it's not even understanding, that little constricted, separative point of view is the one that we illumine with our soulific power and light as we inhabit our bodies, as we come into agreement, regardless of the context in the outer world, as we come into the agreement of truth that we are one spirit and dwelt by one divine current of energy and life force. And you find a point of release in that, because that's the truth. And that truth doesn't shift and change like mental truths do. So on Venus, we live in harmony. And one of the ways that you live in harmony on this planet is to find the point of agreement, so that you sound a harmonic chord. You don't have to see eye to eye. You just have to allow for the different colorations and viewpoints of consciousness that define unity and diversity, which is the hallmark of spiritual life, is to find unity in diversity without having to make a big deal out of it. You allow everyone that unique flavor, that unique color and presentation, and you embody your own. Now, I want to share a little bit about our Venusian understanding that we call on Venus the way of the eternal. And this is why and how the Earth got started as a garden of life, a garden of consciousness. That's what we call these planets. They're all gardens of life. And the soul, in its divine state, sometimes called the mind-born sons of Brahman or Prajapati, these souls were not having the experience of polarity and duality. And without polarity and duality, you don't have any dynamism to catalyze action. So you had souls in kind of a state of oneness and bliss, but they were completely ineffectual in terms of creating, because they didn't have that conscious mind integration that comes with a human body. So the meeting of soul or spirit or Atma with the mind becomes the human being. And the combination of those two, functioning under the law of polarity and contrast, duality, you have the workings of life and experience. It generates experience. So to get the ball rolling, the eternal one, which is what we call the great creator of all things, the Eternal One set souls throughout all of the planetary systems, extended these souls so that they would pick up forms of all different kinds, human forms, animal forms, plant forms, devic forms, elemental forms, all kinds of forms, because soul doesn't care, it just wants experience. And that initial push had to give an impetus for the generation of action. So that first initial push is called Adi Karma, or primal action. It's the primal act or action that starts the movement through duality or time and space. And this is pure Venusian teaching, by the way. And the lower realms were created by the Eternal One for the education and experience and delight of these souls, these fragments, these sparks of the One Divine, however you want to language that. And then there were certain great beings that were set in charge of this revolving of lessons and classrooms, and they're called the Lords of Karma, or the lords of action, because the word karma simply means activity or action. So they were the ones that governed the activities of those that came, which should be all of us, into these lower worlds for training and testing. What's the purpose? The purpose is to become conscious co-creators, conscious gods, in the sense that we are to go forth and co-create with the Eternal One within worlds that are yet to be formed, worlds that are still, let's say, quiescent in potentiality, but not yet moved into in a dynamic way in which forms are generated for the housing of consciousness, again, to have greater and greater expression and creative manifestation. So that's what we do. We go from this planet after we have mastered everything here, and we go on to higher worlds, higher dimensions, higher involvements. And as I've mentioned, I think actually quite a long while ago, there are different avenues of expression that people are drawn to by their nature. So that you have a ray that governs your expression in the cosmos, that you find a perfect match and affinity for your spirit. You might say that ray is emanated by, again, a great God being that holds that particular energy as its focus, as its point of radiation, and then souls that are affinitized with that ray will come under that particular line of expression. Perhaps we'll do a seminar in the future on what those different lines consist of, but I don't think that would be terribly helpful to you, because most of it involves cosmic work that doesn't really make much sense for us to bother our heads about here on Earth. So, the master teacher John Roger had a perfect, I think, definition for what God is, and he defines God as the soul that has had all experiences. So, you're here to have experience, all kinds, and to learn that all life is one. And so, we are allied and affinitized and related to everyone. There's no one that you're going to ever meet that you don't have some form of history with. So the people in your life are in your life because they have come so that you can both teach and learn from each other and work out whatever it is you've decided you want to work out. So it's a primal karma, or the Adi Karma, that gets the ball rolling. Because otherwise you would have no impulse to come down here or get engaged in life. You have to have, karma is what gives you the impetus to get involved in your life. So you really need to, again, pay attention to the things that you are drawn to, that you want to be involved with. That's going to tell you a great deal about yourself. What do you really like to do? What makes you happy? What gives you a sense of purpose and value and worthwhileness? And all things that you do, when you do it with a higher awareness, become service, become offerings to God. So whatever you do, do it for God. Do it for the one in whom you live and move and have your being, the one who breathes you, who beats your heart, who arises within you as a sense of loving, caring, and compassion. That which rests upon your mind when it's still and quiet and peace. That is God. Don't look for an old man up in the sky with a beard. However, I will tell you, when I came into this body, I came in as a future self-integration. At the time of the 11-11, 1991, I think it was, and I stood before this council of these beings, and I swear they looked, every one of them looked exactly like the classical picture of God sitting on the throne, you know, the old guy with a white beard and the long white hair and the long white robe. I was standing in front of like 12 of these guys, and they all looked exactly alike. In fact, I saw a movie not too long ago, and they had a council of these beings that looked very much like the ones I saw. I had to laugh. Thought, well, somebody's had some experiences like I've had on the inner planes. But anyway, just saying. And I was standing in front of each one of them, and as I stood in front of them, they each said in a deep voice, "Athena, remember, you are not human. You are divine." 12 of those, right? So it's hard. You get down here, you know, and pretty soon you get caught up in attachment, and it began to form strong likes and dislikes, and you know, you get going in your karma, and you forget who you are. You lose contact with that sense of being an immortal and pure and eternal and ever blissful spirit. And you begin to identify with your body and your name and where you've been, where you've gone to school, and what you do every day for a living. So look at yourself in the mirror, if you want to, and remind yourself, or, you know, put it on a 3x5 card. Remember, put your name. You are not human. You are divine. And then act divinely through your day. Act as if you were the Lord, as if you were the Master, as if you were a descended, ascended one, which many of you are. Many of you are descended, ascended beings. So remember that. Don't sweat the small stuff. Don't buy into the drama, but notice it, and notice your relationship to it, for that is your life, and that's where you're headed, to live life in freedom, because you have awakened the knowing of truth within your own being, and that's why you're here, beloveds, and, you know, not just to do that, but also to serve, help other people to wake up. However you do it. So, I hope this has been helpful to you. I'd love to talk about these things because I love to practice these things myself. We're all here learning and practicing and self-mastering. This is a school of self-mastery. And I just love all of you and I bless you. And you know what? We're just moving into such a fabulous time. So be happy. Be happy. Really enjoy every moment of this fantastic adventure. And let's take a deep breath and go out chanting Anai Hu, which is an ancient, ancient name for the Eternal One. Deep breath. Blessings to all beings in all the worlds. May all dance in the bliss of their immortal being and be released into the truth that they truly are. Baruch Hashem Adonai.